I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Renee Stubbs, Tennis Podcast listeners. This is our second of two interviews coming to you live directly from the Racquet BNP Paribas Aces for Trees tent during the incredible Indian Wells tournament known as the Fifth Slam, for good reason. I had a chance to sit down before Renee got to the desert with a fellow Aussie, a fellow doubles specialist, and the other half of the Woodies. Keen listeners might remember we interviewed Todd Woodbridge in one of the early seasons of the show, and now we complete the collection with Mark Woodford, who in his own right was one of the greatest doubles players of all time, won every single Grand Slam there is, has a gold medal, has a silver medal. We talk about all of it, including his daughter bringing his gold medal to school, which was awesome. He also lives out there in the desert, so it was really wonderful to get to talk to him and get some local perspective about what it's like to live near this incredible tournament and have access to it year-round. I hope you enjoy, and our next episode will be with Renee's return. Thanks for listening, and enjoy. Welcome to the podcast. It's so nice to have you on. We're going to edit out most of that stuff. No, but it's truly a joy because now I have completed the Woody's collection. It is so nice to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate having the invitation. And I mean, it literally is tennis in paradise. And I had to tear myself away from watching Jordan Thompson.
I'm going to keep this really brief so we can get back in there and watch Jordan Thompson, your fellow Aussie, against Stefanos Tsitsipas. That's a match.
It's great to see him, you know, get out there against a marquee name, Tsitsipas, and give it a shake. I mean, you know, I've known Jordan since he was 16 years of age. I actually was the Junior Davis Cup captain for Australia.
I'm going to ask you all about that, actually, because
Tomo was a part of that team, and just a neat kid. I mean, you know, look, generally teenagers, they're very impressionable. They're, you know, a sponge for information, and just it was a good experience for me. And I knew his dad. We played with around the same age.
Oh, really? I didn't know his dad was a player.
His dad used to play. Yeah. And kind of at the same time when we were going through the early part of your journey, when you're just like traveling in Europe and you know.
It's your first time.
Every
your first
cent is.
Yeah.
I mean, you were... You tried to all travel together because, you'd save a few bucks
right.
along
the
way.
The breakfast buffet, load up so that you don't spend more money
at
lunch.
Go to the Italian restaurants and wait for the families to leave their food. When they left, you went over. And
wow, that's a scavenger level that I didn't realize, but it's good to know that
that's
what it was.
Welcome to,
to
my world.
Sure.
But his dad. So, you can look back with some fondness. But, of course, fondness seeing that his son is playing and he's just started to work with Marinko Matosevic, who I had worked with for a number of years.
And that's amazing.
So I do take joy. I like to see Marinko do well on the coaching side. He wasn't always the easiest of people to coach when he was a player.
Interesting.
And to see him working with Chris O'Connell and Jordan Thompson now and I think he's going to have a real positive impact on those guys. He has on Chris O'Connell already. He's just started with Jordan Thompson. And I think, you know, the way he blitzed Monfils the other night.
Yeah.
And now this
impressive.
One's giving you a good shake.
So you have won every title there is to win that really matters in sport. You've got 12 Grand Slams. You won the Tour Finals two times.
Yes.
You have a world number one next to your name. You also have a gold medal, which to me is one of the coolest things you could possibly have. I mean, that is such a cool thing.
Yeah,
just curious, where do you keep your gold medal?
It actually was out today. Out of the box.
You're like, oh, I couldn't possibly prepare it. Oh, it's in my pocket. I just happen to carry it around in case anybody needs me to wear it.
I almost had it here today. This morning was doing an appearance. I do some work with Harper for Kids.
Amazing.
So
yeah.
Peanut Louie Harper and her husband Tim, they have this a charity that they work with. It's called based on John Wooden's Pyramid of Success.
Yeah.
She's written a book, and so it's just these attributes that that John Wooden, I guess, you know, carved his career out of.
And probably lived by, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it is very relevant for tennis players, but yep. also for, I think, for just kids in general. And
human beings, yeah.
Human beings, that's it.
Right.
I have a copy of it on my desk still.
Yeah.
I've enlarged a frame for my daughters to have in their playroom in our house. But it's just something that I do look at. And this morning I just happened to be, we were doing an appearance at one of the elementary schools nearby.
Cool. That's so cool.
And part of it is taking my gold medal and the silver medal. You forgot the silver medal.
I mean, yes. I'm sorry. You won a gold medal in 1986 in Atlanta, and then you won a silver medal.
And a silver medal.
Unfortunately,
that was the last match for the Woodies, actually, the silver medal.
That's a great way to end. You already had a gold anyway. You need something else to complement it,
yeah.
Don't you think?
It would have been nice if we could have got the trio as well with a
sure.
with a bronze. But
yeah.
We only played two Olympics. But so part of that is taking those medals. And we talk about success.
Yeah.
What is success? And it changes
sure.
changes for me now.
Right.
But as a
yeah,
as
is it
athlete,
a feeling? Is it a trophy? Is it
right.
a relationship?
For these kids, we were saying, and these are, you know, 7, 8 year olds.
Yeah.
At their school, and saying, you know, success for you is turning up every day.
Yep. Right.
Success is, you know, walking home with a smile on your
yeah,
face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe your parents might think success is when you come home and you give them a hug.
Right.
I know that I feel amazing as a dad
yeah.
when my daughters come in the door and say, hi, Dad.
Yeah.
Just hearing Dad, to me, that's success.
When my son can have a conversation with another adult without me moderating it, I think to myself, okay,
that's it.
I've done something that
yeah.
is good. He can be out in the world a little
yeah.
bit. So I know what you mean. And there's something about a gold medal that is a little bit tangible,
and
right,
it, even,
as a marker of success.
Young kids
yeah.
at that age.
Is everybody, I mean, they have to, their eyes have to go wide,
mesmerized.
Right? Yeah.
And
Atlanta Olympics was a special
I love
one.
It. Yeah. I love, and I know even at the time when we won the gold medal and traveling with it to the next tournament, going through security, leaving Atlanta even,
yeah.
bypassed many security guards
cool.
by just, it was almost like you could
yeah,
mesmerize them.
You could
them
just take that anytime.
And got through.
I would wear it all the time if I were you.
Well, I have told the story. My daughter did over here that they went to school locally, and they had a paper bag day. They had to have three personal effects that related to your family.
Yeah.
And so my wife is part Italian. Her
uh-huh.
mother is Italian. And so there was something from her grandmother, and my wife gave her, I think it was a birth certificate because she was also born in Ethiopia.
Wow, cool.
And so my daughter came into the office.
Oh, right, because Eritrea was part of Italy at the time,
yeah,
right? Of course,
right?
Pre-colonially.
And so she said, Dad, I'd like to take a trophy of yours to show that you're a tennis player.
Sure.
I said, okay, in my office on a bookcase there.
Well, you're like, I've
trophies.
Won every Grand Slam there is, so why don't you just take your pick?
Well,
I mean, I'll brag for you because I can tell you're not going
to
do it for yourself.
She went straight to
the gold medal.
And
yeah.
she said, can I take this? And,
yeah.
and of course, the Atlanta one is in a box.
Yep.
I said, well, the box is not going to fit in the paper bag,
Let's
the brown
just take
paper
it out.
Bag. So she said, well, I can just, and she lifted it up and just placed it in there. And I kind of smiled to myself and thinking, I wonder what the effect is going to be
yeah.
with the kids and the teachers as she says, you know, and by the way, my dad won this.
Yeah.
And kind of like, we got a call from the school, from the principal, like at 11 a.m. saying, Mr. and Mrs. Woodford, your daughter, a lovely presentation, but she brought something that we think is of too great a value to be here at the school.
We're nervous.
Could you come and clean,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, yeah. You're like, we cannot lose this on our property for insurance purposes.
It was
that's amazing.
It was quite funny, but to, you know, to see even some of the teachers at the school today, and I've been doing this for years. They hold it like it is it is so special. That
it's like the treasure in Indiana Jones. There's something really special about that.
It is. And I think at the time I didn't really, I mean, going through the throes of you know, match by match, you're marching towards.
Well, the draw is smaller. Not everybody's there. It was only the third time that tennis was in the Olympics since 88 in Seoul and 92 in Barcelona. So it was really not always the biggest deal to tennis players, but it's the biggest deal to me because I love the Olympics so much. Right. And I love the fact that tennis is this global sport that participates in this thing. So that's why I asked you about it.
Glad to hear it.
It means something.
For me, I grew up watching all of the Olympics. Yeah. I had those books that they would produce at the end. And, you know, in Australia growing up, we have the Commonwealth Games.
Right,
so
of course.
Every second year outside of the four-year cycle. So I had, you know, the Olympic Games and then 2 years later, the Commonwealth Games, which Australia did even better at because there are less countries. And
well, also, you beat the crap out of Canadians like me just on the regular. we weren't very sportingly representative at the time. Now we're a little better, but at the time, not so much. Yeah.
But it was a major part for us to win. And I like I said this morning in front of the school, that probably as they had a photo up on the screen, that probably the most difficult part of that day was for Todd and I not getting ahead of ourselves. We'd beaten our long-time opponents. The toughest opponents for us were the Dutch pair, Jaco Elting and Paul Harrhaus. We'd beaten them in the semifinals in the silver medal match. And we had to play against a British pair, Tim Henman and Neil Broad. So we really did start the favourites. And all of a sudden, the Australian athletes, I'm sure it happens in Canada, any country,
people,
that when there's a gold medal match,
and they all of a sudden you're looking out and the crowd is yellow and green, and all of a sudden this means a lot to everybody.
And hearing, you know, Aussie, 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 oi, you're seeing these great athletes that you've seen around the village, and here they are.
Cool.
They're supporting you. And we were on the same floor as the basketball team, who the Boomers, who were having a pretty good run at the games themselves. But
I remember
these giants are standing there just – so we felt ever so powerful because we had these giants you know, supporting us as well. But to actually remember the anthem, that was what we were conscious of.
Wow.
That getting up onto the dais. I couldn't wait to – you know, you get the tracksuit on and the country colours – you see the dais being taken out, you know that you know the anthem's going to be played and the flag's going to go up, and I'm, you know, practically saying to Todd, how do we remember the anthem, you know, whilst we're kind of in tears, breaking down, because I just knew this was going to be emotional
for both
of us.
Of course, you know
and,
that, yeah.
So we had an agreement that I had remembered the first verse. Todd knew the second verse.
That's
so
good. That's planning ahead.
And there's our teamwork.
That's
really
is
the epitome
that
of the Woodies was the teamwork.
You had each other's backs.
Had each other's back and singing not so gracefully. I just wanted to belt it out, see our flag fly, you know, kind of arm around, you know, my best buddy and just a huge achievement. And to see the other Australians singing along with us.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And then just trying to mouth it for the second verse as Todd took over.
Well, you've left me about four possible follow-up questions because I want to ask you about a number of different things. Let's start with Australian tennis. Mm. We had a great showing from De Munard this past 2 weeks. Yeah. You've coached Junior Davis Cup. You've coached Davis Cup. You've coached Fed Cup. Mm-hmm. Now that you've transitioned fully into coaching, being a commentator, where is your head in terms of the Australian wave that's happening? It's so exciting to watch. I know Renee won't shut up about it on the podcast, and she murdered me if I did not mention it to you. So from where you sit, it's a breadth of talent. We were just talking about Jordan Thompson. You know, obviously Nick and Tanasi won the Australian Open last year. Just, I mean, it's a really, really...
guys this year, out of the blue.
Rinky
and Jason Kubler.
Jason Kubler. It's a really deep, deep field, especially in the men's, after seeing, you know, Ash Barty really dominate.
Finally. You know, it's I think as any Australian that has played in the last couple of decades, I mean, you want to see that ongoing success. And I think, you know, I was a part, along with Todd, in a very successful era with Pat Rafter, Mark Philippoussis.
Of course.
We had John Newcomb, Tony Roach as our
captain. They were your generational mentors, right?
Yeah. There were, and I don't want to say fringe as in that they weren't up to our standard, but they were a part of the Davis Cup squad. So San and Stolle, Jason Stoltenberg, Wally Masur was hanging on there. He was a little older than the rest of us. And but it was such a fantastic era to be a part of. Of course, Leighton Hewitt was fast coming up.
But he was young. He was the new. He was around the corner. Yeah, it wasn't yet his time.
And played a little different from the way that generally we played as Australians. Yeah. And then we went through a period, as you said, I entered into some of the coaching arena. I first started out with the Fed Cup, which was the Fed Cup competition, now the Billie Jean King Cup competition.
Thank you for correcting me. No,
probably,
props.
Probably, look, I had to be introduced at some stage, whether, you know, I felt like I could do a good job coaching. I wasn't as confident. I think I was more assured of myself with being on the tennis court.
Sure.
But I had years under my belt. I mean, I was going in fresh as a tennis coach, but you know, I had the luxury of working with Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley, one of my idols.
Amazing.
And the girls on the team, one of their idols as well. I wish I had lasted a little longer. I would have liked it. It was, I think when you're trying to be a leader and a guide. You know, you're having to deal with all these personalities as well.
And tennis players don't naturally convene around a team interest. And so that's why I asked you about it, because you're so famously cohesive with Todd as a team.
Yep.
And then the Fed and Davis Cup squads, BJK Cup squads, are it's a very different animal.
And in our Davis Cup team, we were cohesive. We had our moments, like any team does. I'm not here to say that. None of us had an argument.
I wouldn't believe you if you did. Yeah. Of course.
But I think, look, overall, we worked well together.
Yeah.
It was a team effort.
That's awesome.
So I was, when I went in as the coach of the Fed Cup team at the time, it was just really different. And having to actually, oh my goodness, I do have to pay attention to, you know, how this person is waking up and what their needs
right.
are.
And
as
what's
far as the
chemistry
the
today between these two, and maybe they're not gelling or something. Yeah, you really have to be so much more externally focused, right?
Had to be an open book, had to be able to accept that everyone is a little different. But at the same time, still hold everyone to a standard.
Right.
I mean, to pride yourself as representing Australia and that, you know, we could actually go deep in the competition. It was an experience. It was an experience that I needed, that I think I look back on, and even though I would have liked to have stayed a little longer involved in it, it was just a part of that pathway.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I have to say, I think it's the toughest job in tennis. Maybe that's just me from where I sit, which is kind of pan not having been in it, but the Davis Cup itself, obviously, and I want to focus specifically on the Davis Cup just because you've played on it and also coached it. It's sort of in the wilderness at the moment, let's be honest. Like it's in a tough spot. And
it is.
And I think not
both the team competitions, you know, have been such a massive part of anyone's career, but I think it's lost a little bit of its luster, its position. But I also think that's the success of the tours that have overtaken, you know, the slams have increased, and they're always going to be the, you know, the exception. What everyone's striving for.
Right.
But the WTA tour, the ATP tour, the riches yeah. that are available there, the financial bounty that is on offer has increased from, 20, 30 years ago. And so some players find it more important to establish their career as opposed to playing for their country.
Yeah, I get the tension. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate just because I know Australia has such a strong sporting.
We're a little.
You guys are really a different.
Still so team-oriented.
Completely. And I think there's something special. Every Australian I've met who's an athlete, there's something more connected about the way that your sports culture gets into your blood. To me, that is so evident and obvious. But I also think you're right. I think it's the success of the slams that has sort of dwarfed it. But I wanted to ask you a specific question because here we are in Tennis Paradise. We're in we're at the BNP Paribas Open. It's arguably the nicest tournament, certainly in America, but arguably maybe on the one of the things that I love about coming here every year is the doubles. Watching the incredible doubles specialists. Mm-hmm. We just mentioned, you know, Jason Kubler and Rinki Hijikata, who won the Australian Open this year. Mm-hmm. They play against people who are maybe not doubles specialists in a way that is so dynamic and exciting.
Yeah.
And I want to sort of ask you why you think that is here. I mean, other than, you know, Larry Ellison cutting them a giant check to as an appearance fee, which I actually don't think he's doing. Like, so why do they all play here?
Not an appearance fee. I think, you know, here, historically, it has been probably the strongest doubles tournament throughout the year, more so than the slams, which is a different dynamic. And, you know, talk about that at some stage as well. The slams really should be the pinnacle
of
our sport.
Yes.
But it's not quite the case right now, because we're not having the marquee singles players
play doubles
because they're worried about the effects if it's a best of five sets doubles like they do at Wimbledon, even though they've reduced
it now.
Yeah,
might hurt their chances in the singles draw, for sure.
Their chances. And I think I feel disappointed by that. again, in Australia, we're brought up, you're a tennis player. You play singles, doubles, and mixed.
The best record in my mind in tennis is Martina Navratilova's overall titles, because they are comprised of three exceptional records in mixed, doubles, and singles.
Probably
to me,
the greatest ever player in all three.
You could make the case that, and you can make all sorts of cases about tennis, which is why it's fun to have that conversation sometimes, like who's the best on clay and who's but to me, the fact that she excelled at all three disciplines is a complete tennis player. That's what I would aspire to be.
It's as we say in cricket, it's you doff your hat.
It's a staggering achievement. Yeah. And I wish we had more importance on this idea. Tennis is the only sport where men and women are on the same field of play, and we only really get to see it on a rare occasion. Yeah.
At the four slams, we have the mixed doubles. We used to have it in the early stages of my career, Key Biscayne, when it was played there. They used to have a mixed doubles event, and it was just an unusual time of the year to have one. But they elected to, I guess, drop it out. But you know, the success of the Eisenhower Cup here,
That was nice to see
this year.
Really nice to see.
I hope that has legs.
Also, I like the fact that it's you know, a lot of times you'll see players play mixed in the Olympics or in some of the international competitions wearing the flag. It was really cool to see them from different nations, right? This year, Aryna Sabalenka, who's playing right now, won it with Taylor Fritz. That's a cool dynamic combo.
It is. And so I think it is a reflection of players love coming here to the desert. I think they, this really is the start of the season.
It feels
outdoor
that way.
Season.
Yes.
Most of the players, after being in Australia, they're traveling. Some go through the Middle East. Some are back in Europe playing really cold climates indoors.
Or indoors.
I think this is really like the welcome to outdoors, and the summer season is about to begin. From here, they move to Miami, and then really they are playing outdoors.
Yeah, so
they move
and
on
it's
to
outdoors,
play.
Really,
So I think players are really looking for matches still. Mm-hmm. This is a 10-day event. Next week is a 10-day event as well. So, you know, if you do happen to lose early in singles, bit of a wait until you actually play your next match.
Right.
If you're just playing
singles. Renee made the same point. I said this is why maybe they're incentivized to play.
It also
seems fun.
Well, I think generally the atmosphere here is one of it's relaxed. I don't want to say that it's fun party time, but it is a very relaxed environment here, atmosphere in the desert. And generally we have great weather. And I think the longer the players, they know they're going to be well looked after with Larry, overseeing the tournament. So why race off and head to Miami, because if they're anticipating doing well, they're going to be there for almost 10 days anyway.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes being at a tournament site for longer than, say, 10 days, you know, you're pushing it if you're at a Grand Slam to be there for the full 14 days. Why not stay here and enjoy it? May as well play doubles and keep my hospitality going. And
for sure, and have crowds who are appreciating watching you play in all lines.
The
longest queues I've ever seen at a match here. I've only been coming here maybe 7 years. The longest queues I've ever seen were they put Aryna Sabalenka, Victoria Azarenka playing against Sloane Stephens and Eugenie Bouchard on a court that was too small for them.
Four decent names, too.
Four decent names, four personalities.
Their lines were super long.
It was right before Sabalenka kind of was a known, and you'd only really know who she was if you watched her play BJK Cup and get Belarus to the finals against us, against the U.S. And the lines were out, and they put them on too small a court because they didn't even appreciate how much people here appreciate doubles. And I feel like one thing that's so amazing about tennis is you play doubles for your whole life. And I would love so much for the sport to be embracing of all of its forms
more so, a little bit
more of a marketing sort of sense, which you see here.
They do a pretty good job and I think welcoming and enticing and embracing the guys that do.
Yeah.
There are some big names that are in the doubles.
Yeah.
And look, you could, you know, Rafa Nadal, I know that he's a big friend, a close friend of Larry Ellison I mean, I'm not shy in saying that he quite possibly could be the best doubles player when he's out there playing.
Coming from you, that is a meaningful statement.
I would not want to be on his section of the draw.
Right.
But he plays here.
Yeah.
He is a heck of a player, full stop. I just wish that he'd play more doubles, year round. But it is a marquee event here. And I think back, you know, Todd and I, we only were victorious here once. And that was on the old site.
Yep.
I think it was a tough conditions for us as well. I'm not saying, I mean, I lived here
and
practice here, but it's not that we weren't through lack of trying. I mean, we were competitive here, but it just seemed we started to hit form once we got to Key Biscayne.
Yeah.
Win rate at Key Biscayne was was quite phenomenal.
Yeah, but sometimes as a player you feel like you click.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I don't know whether, I mean, look, I was never shy about playing in front of friends and family. I mean, I think, you know, looking back, my record playing at home in Australia, I won two singles titles in Adelaide and a few other events along the way.
A handful of others. Yep. Yeah.
So I wasn't one that got nervous playing in front of, but here I don't think I got, you know, nervous, but obviously, you know, just didn't have the same success on the doubles court, at least here at this tournament, which is I would have loved to have won a few.
Well, it's amazing because you live here. So you chose to live here and not Key Biscayne.
Right.
And so what is it like living here and what made you sort of commit? I mean, you're raising your family here. Like what is it about this place that feels so magical for you? I mean, it's magical. So I get it. The light, the energy of the mountains.
When I started to have some success and time off was a commodity, and a commodity that I needed to be able to maximize. To fly back to Australia, if you had 2 weeks off,
forget it.
Catches up. When you're young, you know, green, rookie, make those mistakes. As you get a little older and you have good people around you.
Yeah, 4 days of travel out of 14 is a lot.
It's going to build up if you do it a few times.
So really hard on your body.
So that was my a goal, really, was so that it's not that I didn't want to go back to Australia, but I wanted to conserve, play the whole year without being too fatigued. So I came here. I looked at Florida first, but, you know, as we're talking live, I mean, red hair, freckles, fair skin. You know, me and the sun and humidity just do not
go well.
I wilted in those conditions. But dry heat, where I'm from in Adelaide, I'm
fine. Very similar,
So after having a look at Orlando, having a look at around Miami, different parts of Florida, I was thinking, wow, I just don't think that's for me.
Yeah.
Next stop was coming here to play the tournament.
Great.
From the moment that I arrived and I saw the mountains, snow-capped, you really do feel like you can just reach out and touch them. I was really starting to get into golf. Todd loved his golf. Our coach at the time loved his golf as well.
That wasn't Ray Ruffles, was it?
Ray Ruffles, yeah. There you go. And all I saw was this oasis of golf courses.
It's pretty magical out here.
What got me over the line, though, was Rod Laver. He was a member of Mission Hills, where I've had maintained a home there for the length of time when I first purchased a property here. He worked out of there, and I'm thinking, well, Rocket.
Rocket Rod Laver's got pretty, yeah.
Red hair, freckles, left-handed. If it's working for him, it can work for Mark Woodford. Besides the fact that Mission Hills, it was home to Martina Navratilova,
yeah,
Chris Evert-Lloyd, Michael Chang, Pete Sampras.
So you got some built-in practice buddies. Yeah, you got to
check a few boxes.
A few nods, familiar nods at the bar, at the country club. Yeah, not bad. So, not a bad company to keep.
Close to L.A., a lot closer to L.A. than where Florida was.
Well, also, so that when I was L.A. traveling means close to Australia. I mean, that's about as... Yeah.
I didn't want to have to travel the 13... It wasn't exciting to travel 13 hours to get to L.A. or San Francisco and then travel another 5 over to Florida.
Yeah.
I just get into LA, hire a car, drive out.
Here you are.
And I was home. So, I loved the conditions. I wasn't wilting in the hot.
You don't seem to be wilting. You seem to be thriving.
No. And look, eventually, met my wife, and when I decided to, call it a day, we had probably the choices of whether to make the base here. Australia was an option. I did have a base in Europe at the time. And her family was around here as well. And so
amazing.
We elected to... And I haven't lived... never felt like I've lived anywhere full-time since I was 17.
Sure.
I mean, that is the life of a touring professional.
Right.
It's year-round. I didn't take a whole lot of time off. Again, when I had a place in Europe, a place here, a place in Australia... If I had 3 or 4 weeks off, I would travel back home. But, I had my hat laying here as well as Europe. But my wife in the end said, if you're giving me the choice, then I would love to, be able to raise our kids here. And and I love the desert. And I go back to Australia every year.
Sure, of course.
But this is our home. Yeah.
Well, I have one more question that I'm going to let you go because I know you want to see what ended up happening with that Tomo Tsitsipas match.
Yeah.
We are here. Racquet is about making culture, art, history connect with tennis a little bit more. That's kind of what we mission number one for us, and making it feel a little bit more accessible. And for me, seeing how much the sport has changed, seeing how much more inclusive it's gotten, how much more diverse it's gotten,
yes,
and how much it's really embraced sustainability. I'm just kind of curious from you, who has been for 30 years a stalwart in the sport in various facets, what do you see that's sort of encouraging about the sport? And maybe what's one or two things that you feel like we still have a lot of ways to go?
Well, I think for me firsthand is, just being here in the desert, in the Coachella Valley. And, I live at one of the nicest clubs, I think, in the area, Mission Hills Country Club. It's been home to one of the golf majors.
Yeah.
They've had a number of tennis events. They've held Davis Cup. They used to, one of the early showings of the tournament here that is now at Indian Wells was actually played at Mission Hills
Right, of course, before this was tennis paradise.
Yeah. I love the fact that tennis has been, you say about being inclusive. Our next door neighbors are a gay couple, and he runs some tournaments for people in the desert.
It's real gay out here. I'll say that, Mark.
Yeah.
Look, as a gay person, I feel like it's always coming home.
It's a rainbow city.
It's pretty gay.
But the fact that, Mission Hills and some of the other country clubs here are not frightened of actually holding events for a variety of people. But they're, open arms. And it's something that I've noticed over the last 10 years. Those barriers are starting to come down. And I think is fantastic. Even in Australia this year, there was a particular day.
Right. They did a great Pride Day, I have to say. Tennis Australia has been on the forefront in a lot of ways.
Right.
Not only in terms of inclusivity, but just seeing their innovations for the tournament, for the slams, for the connection to the city of Melbourne. I wish the US Open would take notes from them because it's so important
that the four slams work together. And I think they do take a leaf out of each other's book. But, you know, the way that these tournaments are now evolved, even here, gone are the times where you would just come buy your ticket and go watch the tennis.
Right.
Now it is an event. It is about entertainment. And, you know, we have tournaments that pride themselves on restaurants, on the eateries that they provide. Here's not too shabby.
It's a whole experience. It really feels like you're stepping into an ecosystem.
It's like a concert has been played at certain times. So tennis, it's not just going out and playing our sport these days. Or, you know, if you're thinking that you're just buying your ticket, boy, there's a whole lot more that comes with buying a ticket when you come to these great events.
Totally.
So kind of feel, really part of that scene that I'm, you know, commentating at some of the majors, and I get a buzz out of that. And just seeing the building process of these events that are putting out so much for the fan to actually have one of the great experiences of watching some marquee players. But hang on, I can get a good feed, in between as I'm waiting for my next favorite player to come out.
That was such an Australian way of phrasing that. I can get a good feed. That was spoken like a true Aussie. All right, well, Mark, it has been a delight to have you. Now the collection of the Woodies is complete on this podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for making time.
Thank you.
And let's get back in there and watch some tennis.
I'm looking forward to it. Come on, Tomo. He's got to take on
as a sharer of the Thompson last name. I am rooting for the Tomos of the world.
There we go.
Being one. All right, a pleasure, Mark.
Cheers.
Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.